And we're back with another episode of the Work Week After Hours. I'm Shane Howard here with my good friend and partner, Steve Cadigan. Steve, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing well, doing well. We are in the Oreo, middle of the Oreo cookie, sandwiched by two trips to Portugal as we record this.
We are, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably, like, we can tell them a little bit about now. We've hinted about it for a little bit. We can hint a little bit about it, but you've recently been named professor in residence or in practice at Nova Business School of their executive education arm. And we have some cool stuff that we can't publicly talk about yet, but the next time we record, we probably will be able to talk a bit more about a really new Future of Work Institute that mm-hmm. we're a part of. So it's fun stuff.
It is. And it's a testament to, you know, in the world today, if you put yourself out there, if you start talking about what's important to you and sharing ideas with people and reaching out to people, asking them for insight, that's how we made connections with people in your neighborhood now, in the extended universe of Lisbon, who are building a Future Work Institute, much to our surprise. And serendipitously, we connected, and it's been a really great learning experience for me, especially to find someone who's ahead of me on a lot of their thinking in lots of different ways. So, yeah, it's a partnership that will be announcing really soon that is going to, I think, be really fruitful. Not only new ideas, but, you know, one of the things that, as you know, that we're working on right now is actually a completely different approach to building organizations. Completely different, unlike anything that's ever been created. We're building a new model. And some of the folks who are part of that will probably need to have on here who can explain it better than I can to share that. But I think that gets to what I think might be interesting for us to dive into today. Just so many new things coming at us. We talk about all the time in this podcast, right? Whether it is work from home, hybrid, remote, whether it's artificial intelligence, robotics, whether it's digitization, digital transformation. And now we've got rising, okay, you know, mental wellness. We talked about that. We talked about the rise of the contractor and temps and that gig universe. And now we've got the evolution of all these things in an interesting way, which is the evolution of many people are saying that we're going to start to see, which is a skills-based economy instead of, wait for it, drum roll please, a jobs-based economy. And that is, you know, when you thought all the terrifying things were going to start slowing down as a business leader, now we've got skills-based economy. Like, what the heck is that? You know, absolutely. What are you seeing, Shane?
Yeah. So I think it goes down, you know, me, I like labeling things and giving things. So it's what I believe, and we don't have to get into like the last episode, but I believe this is part of like a new work structure and a new renaissance of work. Right. And, mm-hmm. One thing I do want to direct, so because it's early and we might catch some early people, if anyone who's listening to this is in a people leadership role, if you are a C-suite executive in an organization and you are curious about how organizational things can radically be different and more efficient and more modernized, I guess that's maybe the best way to put it, for, as Steve talks about, a more fluid, a more current state of how work is done, then feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, reach out to Steve on LinkedIn. We'd love to kind of bring you in kind of behind the curtain and give you a peek into some of the cool stuff that we've got going on with this new initiative. So what I will say is I believe that what you're talking about in its simplest form is the solution to the workforce talent deficit. And as you have pointed out, and many, many other people much smarter than I have pointed out, there will never be a glut of supply of talent ever again in our lifetime. There's never going to be more people than jobs needed, right? And how do you feel, how do companies grow with that? Well, the only way to grow is for people to become malleable with where they work, and even if we call it work, where they serve or where they contribute. and within what they do. That's my kind of 10,000 foot view of what this really is.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so why are we talking about skills instead of jobs? Why are we talking about that? And I think it's driven by the things you talked about and said a different way, the limited inventory, the increasing number of people changing, not just jobs, but career paths, which everyone, I mean, I'm just seeing more and more research show that's happening faster than all of us realize. The fact that the accounting industry has declared accountants an endangered species right now is really phenomenally interesting. That, you know, people are making different decisions of where they study. So the economy, the jobs, if you will, wasn't built for all this churn that we're seeing starting in schools and people, what they're learning and what they're, and the ways they're learning and how they're learning. So here we are at a point where, okay, you know, the way I look at it is, okay, I need to create value as an enterprise. That's my goal, create value. And the model of, well, I can only do that with people that work for me full time and are dedicated to me. It's just, that's a paradigm that I don't think stands up in the world today. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got some examples. We were talked a tiny bit off air about this, Shane, which is, let's look at Hollywood. Let's look at professional sports. What has happened in professional sports is really interesting over the last 20 years, maybe longer, the evolution of I'm with one ball club my whole career to, okay, well, I'm a designated hitter in baseball, and so I'm really only going to fit the need. That skill is only needed on this team, so I'm going to go over to that team because they don't have a good designated hitter. So, and then it's moving around, and the new team's like, yeah, we need designated, we got your skill, good, boom, you know? And so, and the shelf life of those needs are changing faster than ever before. So I always like to start a conversation. We talked about something pretty big and profound, like skills-based economy from job-based economy, like to find examples where this exists already, to make it less intimidating and less of a cliff that we have to jump off of, you know?
Yeah. Here's what I, and I'm going to call this out just because this is one of the things I love about you and I working together and, a lot of the stuff we get to do. Mm-hmm. Your journey, and this is why I love the fact that you've taken this on. Your journey, little did you know, was prepping you in so many different ways for the future of work and to be this futurist, to be this person that's able to help so many people, is your time even in the video game industry, right? The video game industry, Hollywood and entertainment, the music business, it's all skills based. It's, we hire you as a skills need in and when we need you. And those people thrive. Those people make really good money. A lot of some successful, amazing companies who operate in that model. That's what record businesses are. They hire artists to come in to provide a certain skill set and a certain genre of music. They go hire a producer to produce a certain, like it's what it is. And, you know, we talk a lot about being that benchmark. There are benchmarks for some of this stuff. You know, everything's not always, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's look and see. And you can say, oh, well, my industry isn't the music business. It's not, but there's lessons to be learned. And they did it. The music business operated that way because probably out of a need, right? I would even assume now high quality music producers are still not at scale for the actual need that exists, right? So, which is why you have music producers making hundreds of millions of dollars, because there's very few of them. So the ones that are really good make the most money, right? Mm-hmm. So that hasn't happened, right? And
isn't that what a CEO is, a music producer?
In a lot of ways,
right?
In a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is interesting. I thought you were going to go somewhere else, Shane, when you started on that story. That's why I got a big smile on my face for those of you not watching this.
Go ahead.
I thought you were going to say my journey led to you and I. Like, I was looking for public relations on to launch my book, and all of a sudden you and I bump into each other on the internet somewhere, and all of a sudden, hey, you got a skill I didn't even know you had, and there was some, you know, leverage for each other. It's like, hey, this could be an interesting fit. Let's try it.
Think about that for a second. And I think this is probably really good. And I know there's a lot of loyal people who listen to us and don't really, they know, they hear bits and pieces. I would argue that I don't have like a defined skill, right? There's my value to you, or my value to, from a professional standpoint, is you can't really put it in a box, right? Like I would put it as like a get shit doneer, right? Like make something happen, but that's not like a skill mm-hmm. that's quantifiable, right? And it's like so into that, right? Your journey took you through that. Like, you still like, is it a skill? How do we like, so maybe the first part of this conversation is, how do you identify what the skill is? You don't like gut instinct. So I can't use mm-hmm. gut instinct. So I can't use that. You understand what I'm asking? Like, how do you, there's going to be people listening to this and saying, shit, I don't know what I need and I don't know how to go find it.
Right. Let me package what we're talking about. It just hit me. So I'm going to see if I can articulate this in a way that makes sense. The pace of work, the pace of change is extreme right now. And when you have full-time employees, you're lucky or fortunate if those employees and the skills that they have can keep up with the quickly ever-changing needs that are in front of you, right? When you and I are flying solo, that burden becomes far less because we can just go find people. Boom. You know, and we can go very quickly, put a group together, a virtual team. It's got a finite horizon. We're going to go get this thing done. And it's more project based than we're going to build an enterprise that we own. And if you really sit back and think about the model of work, companies and corporations, it's highly inefficient in lots of ways. And you're beholden to this portfolio that you have. Like, what is the biggest challenge we hear from most of the business leaders who are honest and willing to share it with you, is that I'm not certain the people I have can learn quick enough, can change fast enough, can address the new needs quick enough that our customers are asking for, that the markets are demanding. So that's a problem. You know, so what are you going to do? You're going to change them out? You're going to develop them? Or what are you going to do? And so I think it's that efficiency, Shane, that's a big problem with the model. That, and because we don't have a lot of examples at scale to give companies the confidence, you know, to consider a new model, that I think they're hesitant about that. You know, and they also want to control. They want to own the IP. They want to control everything. I mean, think about for a second, you know, the gig economy companies are just employing skill. You know how to drive a car? Okay, great. You know, that's all we need. Just employ, you know, you don't work for us. We'll pay you, but you just drive the car. That's the only skill we need from you. And be nice to the people in your car. You know, be safe, right? Pass a background check, whatever. That's it. And so it's a very simple, pure model, right? Absolutely. But I think it's really the inefficiency that is increasingly being recognized. And I think the early adoption is playing out in the most big enterprises are increasing the number of contractors, temps, and independent consultants that they have in their portfolio, because they can plug them in and unplug them quickly without the PR hit of a big layoff, right?
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. It is like you want, like, I mean, you and I talk to CEOs and board members on a regular basis about this stuff, and they all agree. They all, no matter what country, no matter what language, no matter where they're at, they all agree that they're all facing the exact same problem. But what we've not heard, and no offense to anybody who has, no one has come to us and said, hey, here's our problem and here's what we're doing about it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's, we have this problem. What do we do? It's almost like they fall back in the chair a little bit. It's like, now, like, what do we do, right? And when the solution is clear but not adapted, for me, it's like, what are we operating in? You know, like mm-hmm. if we know, if you know, like, if you say my cars are all in the shop and your kids are going to be up in an hour and a half and you need milk, they need breakfast. Mm-hmm. It's clear as day. You need to go to the grocery store and get milk, but you don't have a car, so you can't get there on time. If you don't, like, we know we have tools like Uber, but saying, I don't know if I trust Uber with my milk. I don't know what they're going to put in it. I don't know if I can trust it when it gets here. I don't know if it's going to be expired, if they're going to get the right one. at some point you have to make a decision one morning and say, I'm just got to take the risk. I got to get the milk here. And in that process, the same way in the world of work, if we know there are people out, we know every study coming out right now, anywhere in the world is saying, hey, there are people out here willing to do work that do not want to be tied to you from a contractual employee standpoint, that they are phenomenally good at their job. They exist. They're willing to do the work. They're willing to be flexible. At some point, we talk about the region beta paradox, where it's going to get so uncomfortable that you're not going to have a choice but to do things. And it is sometimes confusing to me. I mean, not confusing, I know why, but why more people don't just say, hey, I'm going to commit to this, and we got to start trying some things and experimenting.
Mm-hmm. I think as more and more senior level people, we're seeing it in engineering already, more and more senior level people go independent because they love the challenge of new projects and new clients and learning new things, as well as the freedom, autonomy, and independence. As more and more people do that, I think it's going to be a forcing function, because the place where it's starting, Shane, is on the more, I don't know, rudimentary, elementary work. It's not on the higher, more complex work at scale, right? You and I both know we have friends and family members who are doing super high technical stuff that are going contractor, and companies are going for it, right? Yeah. Because the supply is so low, they'll say, well, whatever you want to be, we just want you doing value, creating value here. And I think that is a huge opportunity that companies need to start recognizing, like, who, you know, what would you rather have? Someone who's not A level, but it's going to be committed to you, or someone who is A level who's saying, I'm going to commit to do great work for you, but I reserve the right to work for other people too. Yeah. Who would you rather have?
Yeah.
And I'd rather take the superstar and prove to them that I'm so cool and awesome to work for, that I'm going to hedge that you're going to want to work more with me, right? Not because you have to, because you want to.
But that takes confidence and belief in your culture and your leadership, because you can want to do that. But if you know that the moment that person's coming in and working in your business, and you know, you can't deliver on that, like you gotta have the confidence in doing that. It takes that culture standpoint.
Yeah. I got a great story for you. And I don't think I've ever shared this story with anybody. Let me guess, probably 8 years ago, I was invited by the top semiconductor company CEOs to they have a sort of consortium where they get together, and I'm talking the big ones, IBM, National Semiconductor, who's the other one that makes all the NVIDIA, AMD. Like, and I worked for 8 years of my professional life in the semiconductor, but I just left LinkedIn and I was sort of wandering around looking for work. And someone found me and said, hey, would you come in and talk about how you recruit at LinkedIn? Because the semiconductor people are really struggling to recruit, right? And I walked in there naively in retrospect, and I basically said, you guys, when I'm recruiting at LinkedIn, you are sitting ducks. And they're like, what are you talking about? I said, you are so easy to recruit from. You got these long projects that take forever to complete. You don't have, you know, fast pathways for people to grow and learn. Generally, I was a little more gentle in how I laid that out, but I said, you're easy to recruit against. Like, I've got, you know, in the internet, the projects are much quicker, much faster horizons, greater sense of satisfaction, more ongoing. It's really easy. And those CEOs got angry. So angry. And I didn't call it out, but like, because your cultures are all crusty and slow moving, and you're built for these long cycles, and you were cool 30 years ago. Now you're not. So what are you going to do about it? You know, it's like, and so one guy was particularly upset at me, was challenging me. I was like, bro, you know, it's like, I can appreciate you don't like what you're hearing, but that's the truth. The truth is you are. And what's your turnover, what your attrition? He's like, you're okay, your stats are right. But so when I was done, he followed me out and apologized in the parking lot. He's like, I'm really sorry. He goes, I don't think I was ready to hear that. I don't think the rest of the audience was. But that was part of the issue, that you want, I mean, it's an age old thing, right? If you want great people, you got to be a place where great people want to be. You just got to do that. And businesses that are holding on, like semiconductors traditionally, we're holding on to people because some legacy, they're going to lose out on this. And this is now So holding on, so culture, yes, but culture's also got to include how people work and the freedom of doing new things and moving around, taking on different projects. And I think there have been companies, we've talked about them a little bit in prior episodes, like W.L. Gore and Associates, Gore-Tex. It's a project-based company where everyone's an associate. They don't have, I mean, I'm sure they have informal hierarchy, but they don't have a real hierarchy. There's project leader and associate, that's it. And when you're done with your project, you go bid on another one. And so, and if they have, you know, if they like your performance and your skills, well, then you're in. So we're seeing more of the, it's called the gig on the inside, right? Which is pretty cool. And I think that taps into a lot of what I'm researching right now, which is this energy that I believe is unlocked when you give someone something new to do, right? So I like the way this is going. We need more examples of it. Maybe we could try to get someone in here to share, you know, what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to ask you a question and I honestly don't know how you're going to react to it. We hear a lot about digital transformation, right? We hear a lot about that. But I've not once heard like we're having a cultural transformation, right? And I'm sure it's a thing, right? But is that like, do we need that more than we need a digital transformation? Do we actually, because culture is what's going to dictate whether we start being open-minded and who we can hire, right? Culture has to say that it's okay to hire 12 people who are contractors that we historically would hire as full-time employees. Culture has to say, be a part of that. So is that really what we need? Like a cultural rep? Like
of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. I mean, it's just digital transformation is disguised for change management on steroids and culture change.
Yeah.
You know, and so what digital transformation is, I think, is, and I'm really going to, it's just a huge leap right now. So don't take me at my word, audience, but I believe that people are saying digital transformation because I can control the technology easier than I control a human being and changing a human. Because I'm not so good or comfortable at changing a human being, I'm going to buy tools and technologies that's going to allow me to skip having to train you on really hard new stuff. And it's going to make it easier for me to be more competitive in the marketplace, right? Or maybe skip a few steps. So, and that is a cultural transformation. Like if your work is going to be done differently, that's changing how and when you do your work and what people you're working with and how it gets done. And all that stuff is really, really critical. It's interesting when you were in attendance last week. Okay, we're recording this, you know, obviously before it's going to be published. But last week I was in Lisbon delivering my very first sort of inaugural talk on artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And what I told people is what AI really is. If you're an organization leader right now, it is culture change and change management on steroids. That is what it is right now. And if you believe that you have a great track record with technology adoption, good on you. But what is your confidence level that you can bring in something that even the creators are nervous about and apply that effectively, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not high. And so when I was sharing that with people, there was just a huge relief, like, oh yeah, wow, we got all this burden. We've got to rush ahead and do this. But that truly is the root of, I think, what we're struggling with right now, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. Yeah. But I, you know, again, everyone's going to say the people who have the technology that's going to digitally transform your business are going to sell the technology because that's what they want, not the culture change that comes with it, which is really, really hard.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. No, it's one of those things where like the solution is clear, but the path is not. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the best way to, like, we can see it. It's like you're standing on a hill and you can see across the hill, across the valley where you need to go. But once you come down that hill and you got to fight through the briars and the lions and the bears and all that fun stuff, it's the destination is clear. It's just the path is, it's not. And, you know, it is going to take, I mean, you and I think, anxiously kind of sit on the sidelines and we're waiting for that, that one really bold, brave, radical soul who's, at a big company and willing to say, look, I'm like, this shit has to change and we've got to address it. And I'm willing to put my job on the line. I'm willing to, you know, do all these mm-hmm. things, because if we don't, mm-hmm. we're in trouble and the world's in trouble, because the world, somebody has to do it, right? Like somebody has to harness, somebody has to catch lightning in a bottle from a people's work, people management, culture standpoint, and say, here, let's inject this into what we're doing.
Right. Right. And if you look at, let's take a couple of, and you know, I get tired of the same old benchmark technology companies, but if you take a look at Apple and Netflix, what they've done repeatedly is just take on these industries that are not changing fast enough, whether it's music, whether it's film and entertainment, streaming, they're just, wow. And they're doing it again and again. And so I think the advantage, I'm biased, but the advantage goes to the companies who built a culture of change, expecting we're going to take a different approach, expecting we need people for the different perspective, not playing defense to hold on to an entrenched business model. Look at the automobile industry. They're just the competitors that are getting slaughtered because there's a new guy, you know, in town, and they're doing it very, very differently. And I, you know, there are companies that I think are making really big strides, but that's harder to do. It's much harder to change a culture than it is to build one with change as your central tenet, right? And that's why, you know, you and I have talked about this. I love working with the companies that are building a culture rather than the ones that change, because there's all this politics and power that are all wrapped up into, you know, why people are resistant to change, because it's putting their power position at risk. So what, you know, what's in it for them? But more fear, and the fear blocks creativity and innovation. So that's why these bigger companies and banking, you know, you saw it. We're inside one of the major banks in Europe a few weeks ago, and I'm using examples of technology companies. And this one guy raised his hand. He was kind of irritated. He's like, well, those aren't banks, you know? And I said, actually, I think I bought a few things with my Apple card today, and, you know, Google Pay. And so, and they're offering loans and they're offering low interest, you know, so maybe they don't look like a full bank, but they are coming for you. And those are not people, whatever business I'm in, that I want coming for me. Like if I see Amazon coming for me, I don't want to be in that business, because they're going to outspend me and crush me, you know?
And it's one of those things where, again, it's, we know it, they know it, right? Cause like here, so here in Portugal, I would say 6 to 8 out of 10 people I know, when they go to purchase something, they just pay with Apple Pay. Like it, like we, you just pay with Apple Pay, right?
That's what I use.
So we know that's a thing, right? I guarantee you the bank has a way of knowing that that's how the trend, I guarantee you there's some sort of code that's transmitted throughout that they know that's how that would, like, that's what that was. So there's an awareness of a certain percentage. I wonder if they even track it. I mean, I'm sure that they do. There's much people much smarter than myself of what percentage of our transactions are Apple Pay, right? Mm-hmm. And the reality of it is, I guarantee you, if you've been tracking it for multiple years, you're seeing a significant uptick in Apple being responsible of holding on and transacting your money. And it's understanding and realizing, are we going to play offense, or are we going to play defense? And like you said, and I think that's probably like the thing of that I am most curious of when I say I hope a company kind of steps up, is who's going to be the legacy company to say we're going to be the benchmark in showing legacy companies that this can be done, right? It's, and I think that, and somebody will, right? That's the world of evolution and you know, innovation. It's who's it going to come from? It's what world's it going to come from? I think the car business is ripe for it. The automobile business is ripe for it, because they're seeing an inflection point of, we're going to die if we don't get ahead of this. So it's interesting. It is really interesting.
Yeah. Shane, talk about for a second that Udemy article that you saw that got your attention, that we were talking about off air a little bit. They're doing something, or thinking about it differently. You know, one of the things that I believe is the holy grail of talent, that is realizable, I think, in our lifetime, and that is the anatomy of skills, that we are going to start to understand how certain skills can be combined to give us confidence that someone could learn a new skill. Okay. Yep. We've never done that before. It's always been on gut instinct and things like that.
Yep. So, so the headline of the article, it's a press release from Udemy. Udemy report reveals trends around the future of work, generative AI, and the shift towards a skills-based economy. 2024 Global Learning and Skills Trend Report shows AI-related skills development on the Udemy business platform increased by 60% year over year. The annual report, which leverages data from Udemy's nearly 15,000 business customers, showcases the critical investments organizations must make to future-proof their workforce, including the shift towards a skills-based economy, adoption of generative AI, and increased focus on leadership development. Shocker. That's exactly what we've been explaining in all of this. As the pace of innovation accelerates, many organizations are grappling with how to address the widening skills gap, which is projected to in turn cause a talent gap shortage of 85 million workers by 2030. To help bridge these gaps and build a more agile workforce,
Udemy's got the solution.
Udemy identified three critical areas of investment as companies begin to business plan for the year ahead. I won't break down each one of them, but it's take a skills-based approach, adapt to advances in generative AI, and develop strong leaders. Wild skills. The year's report also highlights skills showing the highest percentage of growth. Some of those skills with minimal presence the previous year, ChatGPT, and some of them have long been skills we are tracking year over year. ChatGPT increase. The top 10 surging skills that professionals know they'll need to train on include OpenAI. It increased in Udemy's platform 4,419%. Environmental, social, and governance, 3,100%. Google Professional DevOps, 1,400%. Behavioral Economics, 1,300%. Certification and Software Test Taking Preparation, 1,000%. Software Design is up 624%. Today, 9
That's
in 10
slow,
executives.
By the way, because you don't need to design as much if you've got
correct
the leverage of
ChatGPT. Or is it what they're maybe the wording on here is wrong. Maybe they're learning how to manage the platforms that are building it. Today, 9 in 10 executives are focused on implementing a skills-based approach to define work, talent, and career management and more. However, the majority of leaders are struggling to navigate the complex skills landscape and lack the necessary resources required to facilitate this shift.
Yeah. What is missing for me there, and again, I get triggered whenever I hear an article like that, is that just makes me nervous when I hear stuff like that. Like, so a skills-based economy is being realized in this small organization or this big one over here. They're doing it like this. It's because to me, it's like, oh my God, what does that mean? I'm going to lose my job? Like, what do I, learning the right stuff?
Yeah.
I don't like articles like that. I do because it's like, okay, it's informative and there's a part of it that's really helpful to me, but that's not landing with me feeling more comfortable. It's making me more agitated.
Yeah. So it says to help companies transition to a skills-based future, Udemy debuted the Integrated Skills Framework earlier this week, which provides organizations with a roadmap to help them understand the fundamental components of a skills-based approach to learning. Additionally, through Udemy's new badging and certification offerings, organizations are able to quickly and easily assess their current technical skill landscape, identify critical gaps, and supply employees with an effective way to acquire, validate, and share skill mastery. So,
yeah. And that's getting to something that's pretty cool. Think about it. How many skills today are certified and verifiable that you have the skill?
I mean, probably very few to all the ones.
Places where you know is in sales. Are you getting the sale or not? I know the data. Okay.
Yep.
Professional sports. Did you score? Did you not score? Did you win? Did you lose? Did you give up more points? Is the whole plus minus, right? We're going to know soon because we're going to be able to track all this stuff. Do you have the skills at a entry level, intermediate, advanced, expert level? Where are you in that spectrum? Without tests, you know, necessarily, because we're going to be able to see how you're applying it. And that's pretty cool, you know, to be, to have those certifications. And we talked about this at LinkedIn years ago. Should there be a badging? Should there be, you know, these, certifications that you get if you've got it? And there are increasingly more and more, organizations in that space. If, you know, you go to the ASU GSV Summit, it's all about, they've been talking skills for years now. But it's really starting to become a thing. Yeah. And that's requiring us to build different business models that can support that.
So I go back,
which I think are going to give people more of the freedom and independence that they're looking for.
So I go back to the music business, mm-hmm. right? The music business does this based solely off of metrics, right? And the metrics mm-hmm. are every album that is produced, everyone who worked on that album is listed. Right. So if you're the mixer, you're the master, you're the producer, you're the vocals, you're the bassist, whatever it is. Right. Mm-hmm. Everything is listed on each project. Right. It's public facing. You're going to Spotify right now. Any of your favorite songs, you can see who produced it. You can see all that. Right. That is their resume. Right. If that's the validation, that's their badge of this one has 600 million views. Oh, I need a song like this. I need the producer who did this. Right. Mm-hmm. And that is that validation. So there, it's not like this isn't created. How do we, this is where the culture kind of bringing it full circle. This is where the culture of a company has to adapt and say, we're going to change and we realize that we don't own you. We just want to be the place where you want to come and make most of your money. Right. And we've talked about this in one of our very, very early episodes. It's if I'm a company and I know all the metrics that I know that I can retain my customers, that I can retain, I can generate more customers. I can create loyalty amongst my customers. Mm-hmm. If we're willing to look at the data that truly says this is what you need to do those things, and we'll make radical changes in our sales process, radical changes in our marketing logos. We'll change the entire logo of a company. When we know these things about our internal people process and how we lead, holy smokes, we don't even want to address it or even look at it, right? And it's mm-hmm. and it's seeing that and saying, when we get to a place that we realize we don't need to own these people, we just want to be the place again where we're going to constantly have work. And I want the best people at any given time to be giving their energy, effort into what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Right. It's wild. It's wild that like it's right in front of us. And you and I, we didn't plan on this. We were literally mm-hmm. having a conversation and it popped in and it flew. And, you know, it's really interesting. It's really interesting. You know, like we can argue, well, this actor makes the most money. Well, that's because he's the best actor. And we know that. Mm-hmm. And when he's in a movie, it sells $1 billion. Mm-hmm. So you want $1 billion? You go put The Rock and Kevin Hart in a movie. That's what's going to happen.
I was watching a movie with my wife the other day. What was it? It was probably made in the early 90s. Okay. It was really good. I'm going to remember it in a minute, but it had 15 A+ actors in it. You never see a movie today with 15 A+ actors. Why is that? There's 15 A+ actors out there, but why is that? Because there are so many different production companies and, you know, we've got so many different, you know, movies and shows and things getting made in places. So there's more, you know, technology has enabled more opportunity for more people, but we're not going to have like, whoa. And every scene is like, whoa, that guy's in this or she's in that. Like it was like every scene was like, oh my God, I can't believe all this star. And then it just hit me like, wow, you just don't see that anymore. Like the best A-level actors all in the same movie. I think that's good. Generally speaking, right. I'm sort of nostalgic about that moment in time, but that's just really interesting. I'm going to retell a story I've told before, but not everyone listens to all the episodes, but the, I left Electronic Arts in 2009 because of, well, there's a lot of reasons, but one reason was really irritating me. And that was that I had met multiple studio producers who were telling me something which you don't want to hear, which is they're not worried about the work they have for their people. They're worried about the work they don't have for their people. And by that, it's sort of, it's revealing that the way video games used to be made is that it's amazing to say like that was 16, 17 years ago. And now it's already different how the video games are made. But the production of a video game went through different departments in a studio. Okay. So, concept design, then concept sound, and then let's figure out how we can get some voice actors in here and let's do some rendering and let's start getting some prototypes. And when it's through your part, on your team, you got nothing to do. And so these studio executives were telling me, what are we going to do? Because I'm worried we're going to lose those people and they're world-class. So what they did was they said, well, let's make another game. So now we've got multiple games in different staggering segments of production. And so the problem with that is you're not making a game because you've got a world-class idea. You're making a game because you don't want to lose really good people. That is not the greatest motivating factor. You should have something phenomenal to go in there. And sure enough, EA's games were notoriously getting lower scores from the game critics. So I thought about this and I said, I know the answer. The answer is we go to a Hollywood model. We don't hire employees. We just broker you when we need you. And I took it to management and they said, thank you very much, but no, we're not sure that the best people will come back if we let them go.
Yeah.
So we can't guarantee that. That's too much risk. We want employees. Thank you very much. And I was like, man, I thought we're Hollywood. It's a Hollywood model. Let's just hire the team for the project. And there wasn't a readiness for that.
Yeah. Man, like I said, it's so wild that these things have existed and they're right there. But we oftentimes don't see them just because, we're not like, we don't broaden our view of, who might be able to give us a bit of mm-hmm. information that,
I mean, let's face it, entertainment, if you break it down, it's different than consumer goods, right?
Sure.
Like, you got a little bit of a window to build an entertaining movie or a show, but you've got a different window to get that new coffee maker out to market or the new, fashion style. And there's a finite window for you. So the luxury of, okay, let's just get a team together now. I don't know,
Yeah.
I don't know how that plays out, but I wish I had more examples of people trying it,
But wouldn't you like, I don't know, to me, I feel like if you like I think about that, right? Like if I'm on a team and I need the best graphic designers to mock me up a new product. If you've got contracted individual contributors that you only can pull from their knowledge and you're hoping and praying that somebody made a really good hire, that these people are going to innovate the greatest product. But if we have a whole, it's like the ad agency, right? There used to be, the Cut, I think is what it was called. It was on A&E and it's what companies actually have a marketing plan and they go and identify three ad agencies and they come in and they make their pitch and mm-hmm. then they pick one for a week and then they have to or two. And then they have to come in on the very last day. It's a really cool TV show. It's on Amazon Prime. I think you can still watch it. And they would come in and they pitch. Well, you're getting to get multiple insights and feedback and multiple people who are the best in the world giving you options to provide something. And to me, I think that's what, if we have this whole catalog or this whole roster or this whole hive of people that we can tap into when we need, like at any point in time, hey, that guy down there, he's not actively working, but call him up here because last time we did this, he was really good. And we remember, and like some of those are human interactions, sure, but we know his skill set. And by the way, he also just graduated from this course that we offer internally because we want to upskill our people ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we know that he can do this. Like, it's not like a singular fix. like it has to be a complete evolution of, if you're going to be, I guess where I'm going with it, if you're going to be a skills-based economy, then it has to be, you know, I mean, you talk about this, then an organization has to be an skill, like a skills-based institution, right? You have to, like, you have to know yourself well enough that I'm going to identify and bring Steve in. I know he's not great at coding, but man, every single thing we've ever thrown at him, he's been able to figure out and learn. I'm going to use my brother for an example. My brother, he doesn't listen to this, so he won't be embarrassed. But so my brother is very much like me. He learned how to build computers at a young age by picking up a computer sitting on the side of the road and went to the public library and read a book and did those things. And he started working in the e-commerce space at 17 years old and had a job working for a company called Desa. I don't think they're in business anymore, so I'll say the name of them. They made the fireplaces that you, like the gas fireplaces that you can go buy at Lowe's or all the different models, and that's what they made. And he took an e-commerce job after kind of working with two brothers who had started and kind of pioneered some internet things in our hometown. And they went to him a couple times and said, hey, we're going to send you to this training because we know you need this training. He's 17, 18 years old, making very good money, almost didn't graduate high school because he was like, I'm making more money than my teachers. Why am I going and sitting in here? And they went to him and said, hey, we want you to take, like, we're going to send you this training for a week. And he looked at, he doesn't really, at the time, he didn't really like traveling. He didn't like leaving home. And he was like, well, how much is this training? I'm looking, it says it's like $35,000 for this training. And they're like, yeah, we'll pay for it. No problem. He said, I tell you what, how about this? How about you give me a month to learn it on my own? And if I learn it on my own, you pay me a bonus of half of what it is and I'll figure it out on my own. And they were like, okay. And I'm fairly certain he did that numerous times throughout the process and just figured it out. And he's also the gentleman who works for a company that we name and, you know, is a part of the, but that's how we think. It's like, let me find, I know who I am. If you trust me to know who I am, I got a different way. Let me take a different path, 'cause I see something a little bit different here. And I think really good people out there, don't want to fit in this linear path of I graduate, I go in, I sit down and you tell me what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It's, I want you to talk about this. It's what we call it, the novelty of being able to say, oh, I just want something new. And the workforce has changed. You can label it millennials, Gen Z, whatever you want to. I know 45-year-old men and women who are like, hey, I want to try something different. I want to try something new. I want to look at this. And I think recognizing that, and I mean, yes, there obviously will be a shift change once certain people, when people start to age out of leadership who are, you know, redundant because they failed to change. It's an interesting model of looking at how we adapt and how we approach skills and how a company is willing to be creative in those skills. And maybe that's maybe that's an example of like, hey, this guy wants to, like, let's test pilot this.
Yeah.
Would you be motivated to make more money to learn a new skill? Of course I would, because I'm going to be able to make more money with that new skill. And you're going to give me a bonus because I'm saving you money and going and doing this. It's a win-win for everybody. Mm-hmm. And 'cause you need the skill, you need this person to have the skill. And I remember that happening. It was really interesting.
Yeah. And it gets to a part of this conversation, which I think is important for organizations to start to address, which is, so who owns the upskilling? Who owns the skill raising? The individual, the organization. And if you're in a skill-based economy, you better be in the skill-growing economy, you know, business too, man. And recognizing this is, you know, this moment that we're in the world of work is really fun because we're asking fundamental questions which were never asked before. Like, why do we work in an office? Like, who came up with the 5-day work week? Like, why do we even meet in person? Like, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
And so now we're on to like skills versus jobs. And this is really like heavy shit, you know, like, is this really deep?
Think about
and
this.
It's not so go simple. Ahead, it ahead, sounds it like skills to or jobs to skills, but you know, what the pandemic has surfaced as more and more people are working from home is managers don't really know what people are doing. They don't know what really good skills are needed and what really good performance looks like. They don't really know. I'm just speaking at a meta level. Okay. Sure, some of them are rock stars, and I'm sure all our listeners, I'm sure you're all great at it, but you know, you, if you're in a skill-based economy, you got to know what skills you need. And right now we sort of look at, well, they had that experience over there and they did it well. So they can, they've got some of these skills and we're going to bring it here and it's probably going to work. Now you really need to know, and that's a good outcome, but we're going to have to go through some, you know, muddy, you know, pathways to get there.
Yeah. You know, you talk a lot about, and we can wrap it on this. You talk a lot about universities being, or companies becoming universities. And right. I mean, in a general terminology, that's what you say. And it's wild for us, for anyone to hear that and not understand it. And what I mean by that is if you fundamentally know what's happening in the workforce, right? Like if you fundamentally know that unemployment rate off of an old metric that we're using to gauge says unemployment is at 4%, I would argue that the real number is probably 1.5%, right? It's because there's a lot of people being tracked in there who are, have jobs and who work that are counted as unemployed, right? Like that's the case. And if as a company, you understand that you're going to have to farm rather than hunt, you have to farm talent, you have to farm, like you can go hunt still, but we have to do some farming as well. We have to farm some talent. If you know that, if you embrace the confidence that I know we're going to be such a great experience, not a job, we're going to be such a great experience in this person's life. Let's take all the business wording out of it. Mm-hmm. We're going to be the best experience in this person's life, that we're not only going to be that best experience, but we're going to do everything we can to create that same model that Harvard, Yale, you've got kids that are college age and looking to be college age. One of the first things they do once they decide what they want to do, what universities have degrees where the people make the most money when they leave there. That's the university model. That's how the university model has thrived, because there's quantifiable evidence mm-hmm. that shows if I go here and get this job, it's a safe bet for me. I'm going to get this degree, and on average, I can make this. That university pays the most. I'm going to go there. Why not? Why not internally? Why mm-hmm. not internally, if I'm company X, and say, we're going to be that place where I want so many stories of people who came here and their experience with us resulted mm-hmm. in them improving their life, increasing their money. Because guess what? All really smart, really good people want to know where they can go get the advantage to get access to more money, more freedom, and a better experience. Every single one of us. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us. It doesn't matter what my title is and what the contract says in between our relationship. Ultimately, it comes down to what is the experience I'm going to have, and is it serving me by serving you? And I think that model is the company that wants to be known for the place where they've been able to upskill. I want to see that. If there's a company, I pray one day you hear that and you see that. Mm-hmm. And some company steps forward and said, look, we're going to put out the Chick-fil-A on our job report. We're going to put the Chick-fil-A version of that. And we've been able to track, and we've shown that we've increased pay by people who have an experience here with us by $16 million over the last quarter. Phenomenal. Because guess what? You'll have people beating down your door to come have an experience with you. You mm-hmm. will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is for future episodes. When we start framing this conversation from jobs to skills, we're framing an individual conversation. How do teams fit into a skill-based economy, and how do cultures need to change in a skill-based economy? Like I don't know the answer to that right now, but it's something I want to contemplate.
Yeah.
And maybe we can do some homework before our next episode, or get someone, like, cause skill-based is me, my future, my economic security. And I'm from an era of all work is teamwork. So You know, you gotta, you know, and I'm telling that even to my kids today. And I'm wondering, I'm sitting here thinking as we're having this conversation, I'm like, am I really preparing my kids for the future well enough? Because I'm saying, be the person everyone wants to have on their team, you know? And now, you know, mercenary is too strong a word, but in a more individualized component of work, I still think you want that rapport because people still want you to, you know, add your value and make others around you better. But what does that mean for teams and what does that look like and what do cultures look like in a more skill than job-based reality where there's more fluidity, people are coming and going more and plugging in and plugging out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, I actually saw, it's funny. I'm going to send you the article because I think it's relevant and then we will wrap this up. There's actually, there's actually a lot of studies being done on what marriage and what societal relationships will look like in 50 years. And the data and trends show that it doesn't look like it looks right now. And it looks like you'll pick a partner to go have kids. And then you'll also have a partner to do your work with. Like it's interesting. I'm not advocating anything. I'm just saying there's some data mm-hmm. that I saw recently that a lot of schools and a lot of research is being done on this evolution that is happening within society of how we live. And I think like I'm intentionally trying not to use the W word in this, because I think, you know, I think that's because this old language that we use, we keep pigeonholing ourselves into a certain subconsciously, we go into a certain way of thinking.
Sure. People know what you're the general thing, even if you don't mean it. Like we've talked about this before, that it's the future of life, not the future of work.
Yeah. But there's some cool and the cool stuff that you're building and working on that we'll be able to announce next time is a huge piece. All of it will all make sense if you listen to this episode first and then the next one. So yeah.
Great. Great.
Good stuff. Another great episode.
All right, man. I guess that's a wrap here. Season two is gaining momentum. We got a little bit of travel in front of us, but hopefully we'll get behind the microphones real soon. And thank you all for listening.
Cheers.